So let me start you off with a story here this morning. Because everybody loves a story. It's a story about a woman named Edith Stein. And I'm sure that plenty of you already know all about Edith Stein. She's very famous. But I'm equally certain that many of you have never heard of Edith Stein, and you really should. You really should learn about her life. Because she lived a most extraordinary life. And I'll just tell you one little story from her life here this morning. Edith Stein lived about 100 years ago, give or take, in Germany. And she was a world-class academic. She was a university professor, a philosopher, a world-class intellect. A Jewish woman born into a Jewish family, however, she was raised as an agnostic. Maybe because when she was only 2 years old, her father died, and I don't know, maybe family grief, or I don't know what, but she was raised to believe that it didn't matter whether you believed in God or not. Maybe God exists, maybe God doesn't exist. Fact of the matter is, it really makes no practical difference in your life if you believe in God or not, so you're better off basically just ignoring the idea altogether. That's how Edith Stein was raised, and it crushed her spirit as a little girl. She wanted so badly to believe in something, but didn't know where to turn. And the problem got even worse with the outbreak of the First World War, which in her native Germany, she saw the horrors firsthand. For those of you who know your history, you know that you cannot overestimate the impact World War I had. It's been described as the time in which mankind lost his innocence. Not that we were ever really very innocent before, but we had no idea that we were capable of carrying out such horrors on such a grand scale, one person against the other. And Edith Stein saw this. She saw supposedly Christian nations slaughtering one another wholesale, and it only had the effect of deepening her unbelief, hardening her agnosticism to the point of atheism. Such was the way things were going with her when suddenly, one day, everything changed. You know, God can be funny. Sometimes he waits until the most dramatic possible moment before he intervenes in someone's life, touches their heart, touches their minds, and makes a life-changing decision. That's the way it was with Edith Stein, because one day she was going to visit a friend of hers, a woman named Anna. And Anna was a war widow. Her husband was killed fighting in the trenches, fighting in the Battle of Flanders, First World War. And Edith had no idea what she was going to say to Anna. What could she possibly offer verbally that would do anything at all to help this poor grieving widow? Well, as it turned out, it wasn't Edith who was going to help Anna that day. It was Anna who was going to help Edith. Because Edith Stein was astonished to discover not a woman doubled over in grief, paralyzed and incapable of carrying on life, consumed with sorrow of her absolutely horrific loss. She was astonished to discover a woman who was based, solid, peaceful, hopeful, even joyful. And what really astonished Edith Stein was to discover that the reason for her hope and for her joy was her solid Catholic faith. Now, this is a woman who had been raised to believe that religion didn't matter. And right in front of her was a woman for whom religion mattered a whole lot. She was living through a crisis that would crush most people. She'd been robbed of decades of married life that she was supposed to be looking forward to. She was doing it with a peace and a joy that nobody can fake. Now, you ever heard this before? Your faith should be so solid that you should give atheists a reason to question their atheism. That's what happened when Edith Stein met Anna. Her unbelief collapsed, didn't stand a chance. And she started to pray, and she hadn't prayed in years. And she started to study, took that world-class mind of hers and started studying the Catholic faith. And the more she studied, the more convinced she became. And one night after praying and studying the whole night through, dawn came, closed the book. She said to herself, "That's it. It's true. All of it." And the Jewish woman that raised as an agnostic was baptized as a Catholic. She went on later to become a consecrated religious sister in the Carmelite order, same order as our own patroness, Saint Teresa. Make a real long story really short. When World War II broke out, the Nazis learned about Edith's Jewish ancestry. And they took her prisoner to the concentration camp Auschwitz, where she died in the gas chambers in 1942. But in 1998, it was Pope John Paul II who canonized Edith Stein, a saint of the Church, and she's known today as Teresa, Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. Now, the reason why I tell you all this is because of one line of the scriptures that we read today that I am absolutely certain none of you paid attention to. It's the first line of the gospel. And it's one of those lines, as you know, you hear it and you don't even realize that you've heard it. It's the very beginning of the Gospel of Luke, and Luke tells the people why he's writing this gospel, and he says, "Many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the events that have been fulfilled among us, and so I too have decided to write it all down in an orderly sequence so you might realize the certainty of what you've been told." You hear that, you don't pay any attention, right? It's like the opening credits to a movie, title page to a book, throwaway line. And it just goes to show how much is in these scriptures. Because there's one word and one word only that I want to focus on, and it's the word certainty. Now, do a little bit of word study with me here, okay? Because if you take a look at the word certainty in its original Greek, you'll find that that word is asphalo. You've heard the word asphalt? That's where we get it. Asphalo, the Greek word for certainty. It's solid, it's certain. It's like asphalt, right? But there's more than that. Because that word asphalo is made up of two words, a and sphalo, and that literally means to prevent you from stumbling and falling. Why is Luke writing his gospel? To give you something so certain that it'll prevent you from stumbling and falling as you make your way through life. Now, there's lots, as you make your way through life, that's going to make most people stumble and fall. Suffering, especially innocent suffering. The loss of people you love in death, especially when it's out of the ordinary sequence, like the death of a child. When you see tragedies and horrors, you know, mass shootings, that kind of thing, people stumble and fall. They look up to the heavens and they say, "God, if you exist, where the heck are you?" Luke writes his gospel to give you something that's going to keep that from happening to you. I was reading an article not long ago, and the title of the article intrigued me. It said, "What to do when you're at the end of your rope and have nowhere else to turn." You know, it wasn't a Catholic publication, secular article, but, you know, I read these things just to get an idea of what people are saying. So let me summarize the article for you, okay? What to do when you're at the end of your rope and you got no place else to turn. Turn to family and turn to friends. Get involved in hobbies. Especially get out into nature. Breathe some fresh air. Practice gratitude. Get enough sleep. Get some exercise. Make sure you're eating right. And if none of that works for you, find help from a licensed professional. Now, don't misunderstand. I don't disagree with any of that, right? 100% absolutely true. But that's not anything like near enough. to help you when you're stumbling and falling at the unjust sufferings of life, you need more. You need much more. You need something to help you be certain that you'll be peaceful and even joyful no matter what. And I want to tell you this morning, there's only one thing under the heavens capable of doing that. And that is a vibrant faith in God, a vibrant relationship with God that's rooted in an understanding of the death and resurrection of Christ. One of these days, maybe I'll give you a homily, I'll tell you about my own little journey as I wandered through, before I was a priest, obviously, right, back in college, wandered through different religions, wasn't quite sure what was true, my own little odyssey. Came to realize there's only one thing under the heavens capable of getting you through the death test, times when everything falls apart, a vibrant relationship with God that's rooted in an understanding of the death and resurrection of Christ. And that means an understanding that God always brings good out of evil. And that goodness, truth, and beauty can never be destroyed. That was actually the message of our first reading, believe it or not, let me tell you about it. Reading from the prophet Nehemiah, and that's one you never hear very often. You go to church every day for 3 years, you'll hear Nehemiah once. And that day was today. Who was Nehemiah? He was an unsung hero of the Old Testament, lived about 450 BC, and he brought the Israelite people back from the brink of extinction. Because they've been living apart from their homeland for 100 years, and generations had come and go, and they'd forgotten who they were after all that time. And he brought them back to Israel, and this is where the first reading begins, and he read to them from the law, and they hadn't heard this in years. He told them about the promises that God had made, and the covenant that God had sworn, and the people that he'd made his own, and the people heard this, and they wept for what they'd lost. And that's where Nehemiah says this line in the first reading. And he says it to us just as much as he says it to the people then. He says, "Do not be sad and do not weep, because rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength." God alone, ladies and gentlemen, God alone is capable of giving you that strength. But you know what we need to do? We need to make that relationship happen. Because if you're not in the habit of regular prayer, regular mass, regular going to confession, I don't know, when the chips are down, you might not turn to God. We need to make it a habit. I'll tell you another story about Edith Stein. One day she says she's walking through the capital city, busy city streets, bustle, bustle, hustle, hustle, people all over the place. Right in front of her is this woman. She's walking down the street, she's carrying these big shopping bags, when suddenly she doesn't go home. She makes a turn, goes into the local parish church. And Edith follows her. What the heck is she doing with her shopping bags going into a church? And she sees her kneel down in an empty church and pray to Christ in the Blessed Sacrament. And she was completely blown away. She said, "Here's a woman who has a vibrant, intimate relationship with God on a daily basis. That's what we want. That is what we want to establish." One of my favorite lines from Scripture is Psalm 46, verse 10, which says, "Be still and know that I am God, supreme among the nations, supreme on the earth. No matter what might upset you, God is sovereign and ruling over all." That's the understanding that lets us receive something this world does not offer. And it gives us a certainty that nothing in life can ever take away. God's grace is on offer. It's up to you and to me to respond. It's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.